Welcome to The Rock Play, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and joining me today, he's the winner of he's the winner of the best podcast co-host at last night's Academy Awards. It's Justin Houseman.
I thought you were going to. He's the winner of the Bed Bath & Beyond Award for I don't know what. That's where I thought you were going.
But Bed Bath & Beyond, what, they sell outdoorsy stuff? They could be a partner, right?
You know what? I bet you they do. I bet you they have stuff that you would use outside. I bet you they have like a little weird camping section.
You've reviewed cotton like sleeping bag. Why couldn't you take a freaking comforter, right?
No, you can. Right? I would now because I have one. But before I had my cotton sleeping bag thing, my truck camping setup was a comforter.
It's more
like
more
a down comforter. Why wouldn't you? If you're car camping, there's absolutely no reason to bring a sleeping bag. You just bring blankets from home. Or, I guess they'll get dirty, but yeah.
Well, we're recording this on Friday, March 8th, and you're listening to it on Monday, March 11th, which means that in between now and then, we had ourselves a little old weekend. It also means that it's time for America's favorite podcast segment, What is Justin Doing This Weekend? Presented by Long Weekend Coffee. So, Justin, America wants to know, what are you doing this weekend?
You know what I just realized is that all those people listening, you lost yourself an hour over the weekend, didn't you? It's Monday morning. You lost an hour.
Yeah, we're in the future now.
It's the best weekend of the year. It's the best Oscars? Weekend of the year.
March. Oh, springing forward.
That's this weekend. I know we just talked about that the other day. I didn't realize Sunday night. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, springing forward, there's nothing better. It's a little gift to all of us from, I guess, I don't know, the people that invented the calendar, whoever that was. Wait, what a wild thing to do, by the way, just invent a calendar.
There was a whole, like, actually passed in Congress that they were going to do away with daylight savings, right? And then it didn't that was a few years ago. But did that mean, if that ever comes to fruition, does that mean we spring forward, like, one last time and then we just stop doing anything? Or does that mean we fall back and then we
stop? Yeah. It's a good question. I don't know. I think California voters passed something saying, I don't know if it was a federal thing. It might have been.
It was a federal thing. There was a whole, like, it has to, like, the Supreme Court has to, like,
there's no chance in hell it would pass both houses. Cause, like, I think farmers actually do sort of care, maybe.
No, it was actually a war effort. The farmer thing is a myth, apparently.
What?
Yeah.
Look, I don't really care. Point is that now I can surf longer. I can ride my bike longer. It baffles me that people get annoyed by this time change. I mean, okay, great. You lose an hour of sleep. So, I mean, and frankly, if you're so young and kidless that losing an hour of sleep bothers you, I don't give a shit. If missing an hour of sleep is that traumatic, you are living a life of absolute luxury, my friend.
I'm usually falling asleep on the couch at like 7 o'clock anyway. Now it'll be 8 o'clock. Now I can just go to bed. I'm kind of like, oh, it's 8 o'clock. I'm just going to go to bed.
I get giddy. Like, I am so pumped. Like, it will be like going to bed on Saturday night. I'm going to be so pumped because, well, sadly, it's probably gonna be raining here this weekend, but like, Sunday, it won't get dark until like 8 or whatever. I can never remember exactly when
it'll
be
like 7,
happens.
Like 7:30 or something. Last night, I said to one of my daughters, I was like, it was like just about 6 o'clock. I go, hey man, Sunday night, this is what it's going to be like at 7 o'clock. And it was still light out, you know, so the evenings
are coming.
It
sounds so lame. Hearing you say that sounds like a lame thing to get excited about. But like, I don't know. To me, it's like a good way to tap into being a kid again. Because remember how exciting that was when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah.
It's like it's like, oh, I can stay out after dinner. I can go back out after dinner.
Go back outside, yeah.
And like where I live, it's like I live on a little street that's full of kids and like a really tight knit neighborhood. And so basically as of this weekend, like the street becomes like a block party, like almost every day if it's nice, like kids in the street, everyone's like out chatting with each other. It's happy hour like every day. It's great. And like it's the mark of like not just summer, but just like feels like life returning again. You know, like I have time to do all the things I want to do. I don't have to cram it all in before 5 o'clock. I can go pick up my kids from daycare and then go for a bike ride. Oh,
What Justin is Doing This Weekend is presented by Long Weekend Coffee. Be sure to get all of your coffee for all of your adventures by heading to longweekend.coffee and entering promo code ROCK10 at checkout for 10% off of your first order. Long Weekend Coffee, more weekend, please. So let's get...
It's a good weekend for Long Weekend Coffee, too, because, I mean, the whole vibe of Long Weekend is, like, more outside fun time, and
right?
Now you have congratulations, you get one. That's courtesy of Long Weekend.
Actually, this is coffee perfection because it's a little darker in the morning. So you're going to enjoy your coffee a little more. You can't go anywhere. Just sit there and enjoy your coffee because it's darker in the morning. But guess what you get to do later in the day? Go outside for longer.
Oh, that too. Yeah, that too. So it's the perfect coffee for the time change.
So let's get into the headlines. We're going to start with a follow-up to a story we discussed just a couple of weeks ago here in the Rock Fight. According to explorersweb.com, the new regulations aiming at curbing excessive luxury on Everest have proven so troublesome that Khumbu authorities have had to walk back some of their preliminary decisions. A few weeks ago, we talked about this, that they were going to start limiting.
No more like movie theaters at base camp.
They're like minimizing what set up in base camp. And fewer helicopters going back, shuttling things back and forth, as well as, of course, you have to pack your poop off of the mountain was another big change. So in particular, there was an obligation to use yak convoys instead of helicopters to ferry supplies from the last leg of base camp. And that has changed. Outfitters were having problems finding enough yaks, which is from the town, which is 2 days away from base camp. And the loads are so massive and the facilities at base camp so expansive that yaks simply can't keep up. The situation was only going to worsen when climbers started their rotations to higher camps in April. At that time, the need for supplies, especially bottled oxygen, increases. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess, good intentions and all that. I've kind of come around on this because I did a little research after reading this article, and the economic impact for Nepal for the in terms of the activity on Everest is $370 million a year. And you put that comparison that the average income for someone living there is $700 U.S.
Well, what's the GDP of Nepal? I'm surprised the GDP is even $370 million
in
Nepal.
That's a really good point. $36 billion. U.S.
Okay. Clearly, I have a lot to learn about GDP.
Yeah.
That's a huge percentage of that.
Well, and it's just, the Sherpa can make up to $5,000 in 3 months doing this. When you think compare that to an average salary in Nepal of $700, there's only 800 climbers that come to climb. You start adding all this up and how important it is, culturally too. I'm not saying there aren't. How do we make it better? And so I think the good intention is there. And the other thing that was in the paper, too, by the way, they mentioned nothing must remain on the mountain at the end of the climb. And that includes dead bodies. So if someone dies on your expedition, you are responsible for bringing the bodies down.
I cannot believe that needs to be said.
But it does, though. I mean, think about all the stories on Everest. You get up by those guys. They call them Yellow Boots. And no one even knows the guy's name. You make a left at Yellow Boots.
I'm still kind of horrified by the pooping thing because I just don't know how everybody knows that that's a sacred place, not sacred to the mountaineering community, but sacred to that part of the world.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and frankly should be to everybody, the highest point on the planet. You're going to poop on it? You're going to poop on that?
What's that's worse, pooping on it or dying on it?
The fact that that's gotta be just so ungodly disrespectful. So you're just going to leave a body up there. Sorry.
But they're all over.
I still say, I don't know. I still say that somehow the Western countries need to pony up whatever 5 times $370 million is. Give Everest 5 years off. Just give that money to Nepal.
Yeah.
Pay the Sherpas. Pay everybody who's involved. Tell them to take five.
Or
five
maybe
years.
Pay them to just go help clean it up or something. Or
that,
whatever.
Just let the mountain rest.
Yeah.
Just let it freaking rest. And maybe the mountaineering world will find something else to climb and ruin that. Of course they would. But I just feel like there needs to be more of a fallow period for overused natural resources like this.
I think I agree with you.
I'm surprised that's not baked in somehow. I mean, at the same time, it's Earth. We're humans. You should be able to do whatever you want, I guess, to a certain degree. But
Is Everest almost taking a knee for the rest of the world?
You could argue that about Yosemite, right? I think about that Yosemite Valley. It's it'd be nice to get all that crap out of there.
I've never been to Yosemite Valley.
Well, I mean, it's in a spectacular place. You'll go there. The second you go there, you'll be okay, I get it. It's probably the most, I get it of anywhere I've ever been in my life. You're what's the big deal? And you go in and you're holy shit. I go there.
I've flown
twice
over up to somewhere in Oregon or why, and you look down and oh, there's Yosemite. And even from an airplane above it, it's spectacular. And I really want to go, but there's always a little piece of me. It's do I want to go deal with what's going on in Yosemite Valley?
It's worth it. I'll take you at a time when I know that it's less crowded. It's worth it.
Okay. All right.
But at the same time, you're kind of also keenly aware that we kind of were all right, this is going to be a sacrificial lamb.
That's kind of what I mean.
For the rest of the Sierra, basically.
Well, to our point when we talked about this last time, it's like, how many other cool mountains are probably in Nepal? If you like to climb mountains, you could go do it. Just they're not the highest, but there's probably nobody there. And it's like an 800 climbers a year. And I understand it's a small area.
I'm surprised
area.
That's it's
still
that
a lot.
Few.
That's the average,
I guess.
Average,
the climbing
guess.
Season is really short. So is that summiters or people that
well,
try?
I think that's climbers. So then you have all the other ancillary folks, yeah. Right? Anyway.
Stop leaving your shit there. Don't bring TVs. I still don't, what, so you're, so wait, what, so they can't have enough, because they can't, is it reasonably the reason that, because there's not enough yaks?
That's the big reason, so they're going to allow more helicopter trips. I mean, I just kind of like, they're trying to do right here, right? They're talking about, for years we've been shitting on the mountain and just leaving our bodies up there. They're trying to kind of regulate it more, trying to make it a little more, like, they're trying to do the right thing. And look, if at this point they don't have the resources, they got to go back to some more helicopters, then I get it. I guess I'm sort of off my high horse of like, To your point, I would like everything you're saying, I agree with. I would love for them to give the mountain some time off, but just like, you know, all right, let's continue to make progress here, and maybe in a few years it's a better place to go than it is right now. All right, next story comes out of New York City, where a story from New York's Fox 5 News reported that according to a new report, cycling deaths in New York City have hit a 23-year high. According to the New York Department of Transportation, 30 cyclists have died and nearly 400 have been injured. It didn't tell me what, I'm assuming this is in 2023. The common theme through almost all of these incidents is that it involved people riding e-bikes. And so I've kind of two thoughts on this. The first one is like the surge of e-bikes is it's going to continue. I mean, it's kind of this perfect combination of something that bike brands can pump out new products to a consumer base that are hungry for it. But I things are changing and there seems to be a lot of consequences to those changes. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I don't know what to do about it. I mean, I guess, like, to me, this sort of thing is more indicative of the sickness of car culture. I mean, so we have, like everywhere else right now that has children, you know, a huge issue in town with, like, kids on e-bikes riding too fast and blowing through stop signs and not wearing helmets.
Man.
And I know it's like that everywhere. And like I know that girl died a couple years back in Orange County, I think, falling off the Rad bike, and like I think Rad was sued because like the brakes weren't big enough for the weight of the bike, or I don't remember, but it's awful. And like, I can't believe that hasn't happened here more. But what I can't help but think though, is that like the bike is still at a disadvantage. So if you're dying in a bike accident in a city, it's because a car hit you.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that doesn't mean that you didn't run in front of it, that you didn't do some terrible, dumb crap. But I don't know how you look at something like this and think, oh, the problem is e-bikes. Like, the problem is clearly cars. The problem is clearly that in congested areas, we have cars. There shouldn't be cars in New York City at all. There should be delivery, like delivery vehicles.
Banned cars.
Yes.
In New York City.
Yes. Like, there should be delivery vehicles. There should be maybe some cabs.
Cabs and Ubers.
But you already have a freaking amazing subway system. I mean, like, there's no reason for there to be car. Like, you shouldn't be able to just drive through New York. You shouldn't be able to just drive through San Francisco. Like, that. We should not do that anymore. Like, we all know better than this. And, like, you know what makes a whole lot more sense? An e-bike. Like, if you're just starting from scratch right now, and you're like, I'm going to design if you're, you know, I'm going to design a city. Here's how a city should look. At no point would you go, there should be cars. That would never occur to you.
No.
You would be like, okay, here's where you should be able to ride e-bikes, and here's where delivery trucks should be able to access, blah, 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 blah. But those two things would probably not meet.
Yeah. Like, and apparently a lot of these accidents happen where bike lanes aren't, if you're reading about some of this. I don't know if this is the instances of helmets, of the ages. They didn't get into a lot of those details, but the change doesn't seem, people are riding bikes in New York for years, but it wasn't like Quicksilver, a movie about bike messengers in New York City. And I think
so clearly
this is
there's something about the e-bike that makes
it
more
throttle,
dangerous.
Right? It's the faster bikes.
I think that's part of it, but honestly, I think there's probably just more people on bikes. I mean, I definitely think that that the speed probably matters for sure.
Yeah.
You know, if you fall going 25, it's a lot different than falling going 10 miles an hour. You know, and like if you're on a bike in a city, 10 miles an hour is usually plenty fast. You're probably going faster than cars.
But we've talked about this before. Like I even like where I live, which is fairly, suburban with a lot of bike lanes, and there's the kid riding the e-bike throttle bike, it's going faster, and you kind of have it in your head of like, what does it mean when you're passing a bike and then you're going to make a turn, they might make it, or if, they, yeah. if they're not going to make the turn, the time you have to make the turn before the bike gets there. And it's like a yeah. whole new calculus now after I've been like driving yeah. for 30 years.
It's
right?
like people on motorcycles in places that you don't expect them, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, it's already hard enough to see a motorcycle.
And but then there's a lot of kids who are like just not even riding responsibly because they're kids, and like neither you or yeah. I would have either. We'd be like zipping around like freaking madmen on these things.
That's all true. And that's its own thing, though. You know, like I don't see, like, when I was a kid in California, I think they started the helmet law when I was in high school.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure that's still in the books. Like, I think if you're under 18, you legally have to have a helmet.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I never really see kids get like busted for that. I don't think I've ever heard of a kid getting like a ticket for that.
Cops have better things to do, probably.
But do they? I mean, that's the thing.
That's
like, that's
point.
The kind of thing that should probably be like, just regulate that. Like, that's kind of the only thing you can really do. Like, around here, it's like, I had to get off Nextdoor because it's just so toxic. But like, yeah. 95% of the comments would be somebody talking about kids on e-bikes and them wearing helmets and like, it's the parents' fault and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure that that's true. But as far as this New York thing goes, to me, that's really, I think the wrong lessons are going to be taken from this. I'm
yeah.
sure. Like, the city is going to be like figuring out ways to like either like restrict e-bike access or ban them or do something. And they're no one's going to give a rat's ass about delivery trucks that are too big, SUVs that are too big, people on their phone. No one's gonna look at the car. No one's gonna look at cars. It's gonna be the e-bike's fault somehow.
I guess the one thing they do mention, like I said, is there's a lot of these that are happening where there is no bike lanes. If that could be the key takeaway, where it's like we can improve the bike infrastructure, then like you see these mm-hmm. things just automatically go down just from that. That should be the key takeaway. On the e-bike front, though, this is the second thing I want to talk about. Like, are we losing something with e-bikes? Like, this is where I get to be, like, kind of the curmudgeon. You know, I don't want them to go away. I understand the value they're bringing. And like I said, I recognize that we're in this sort of transition. But just coming out, like, when I'm out riding my mountain bike, I have just an absolute hate of them when I encounter them on the trail, which is more times than not now. I feel like I'm, like, the only guy left riding an analog bike around where I yeah. ride. And then I don't like the "I can go twice as far as you" mantra. Someone told me that actually on a trail recently. Like, you know, we were kind of joking. I was like, "Well, I can go twice as far as you," and I'm like, "Hey, fuck off, man!" Like, I just got so like pissed off about it. So I don't know, but are we? Is there something being lost in the? And I hate I don't like being this yeah. guy, but it's hard for me not to feel this way.
So, I don't have. Right now in my garage, I own an e-cargo bike, and I have an e-bike that's like a one-person bike with kind of, it's not a mountain bike. It's just like a kind of town cruiser that I'll take on fire road sometimes. So those are the only two I have. I have owned three different e-mountain bikes over the last like 5 years. And I don't have any of the e-mountain bikes anymore, which is weird to me because I fell in love with them pretty easily. Like, how could you not? I mean, you hop on one and you're like, oh, you immediately are laughing and smiling. Like, they're so fast and it makes going uphill fun. I like technical climbing. I'm kind of a weirdo. Like, that's
so
one of my favorite things about mountain biking. Like, it's actually kind of hard for me to like ride with my friends because they all hate it. But I love technical climbing.
Yeah, I'd rather go uphill than downhill, honestly.
Kind of. It's way safer. And it's trickier. I don't know. I like it. It's something weirdly masochistic about. I'm not like an endurance freak, but there's something about.
Well, it's a little contrarian too, right? It's like that I like doing the thing that no one else likes to do. There's definitely some of that probably. For me in there. Yeah.
Well, it's also because I can do it. Right?
Yeah,
like,
me too.
Like,
yeah.
I'm pretty gun shy about going fast after my horrible accident a couple years ago going downhill, but like uphill, it's like, I'll try that.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And I only wear flats, so I don't have like a fear of like being clipped in and like tumbling over because I couldn't like, you know, clear a problem or whatever we call it in mountain bikes. Anyway, I don't have an e-mountain bike anymore. And I will say that in Marin County, where there are a lot of really good mountain bikers, it is kind of dominant. I think there's probably more e-mountain bikes than analog mountain bikes at this point. And I do kind of get a little thrill of being the guy that's on the analog bike.
Hell yeah.
on some of the climbs I do. I'm not like, I hate to say it, but there is a bit of a holier than thou vibe that I get. You know, I'll pull over and let him pass and like, but have a fun ride, guys. And it's just like, you know, I don't know. I just feel, I don't know what it is. I've kind of come around to the, like, to the appreciating the earning it aspect, which, you know, again, that's not part of my adventure. I'm not a big suffer fest guy. I'm not like a pain cave lover. I don't think there's a lot of, it's not like I derive value from that sort of thing. But for whatever reason, the last couple of years, I've really come around to appreciating what an analog bike is.
That
having
kinda,
said all of that,
yeah.
though, like, I have no issue with e-mountain bikes. I think they should be on allowed on every trail. They're not a problem. E-mountain bikes are not a problem.
No, I know.
Like they're, you're not going faster than me downhill. You might be going faster than me uphill, but rarely am I getting passed by an e-mountain biker downhill. So they're not more dangerous. They make it more fun for everybody. They're getting more people out there. I mean, all of that is good. In Marin County, we desperately need more like pressure on local authorities to open more bike trails. And so the more people on e-bikes, the better.
You need more
trails. It's getting better.
Yeah.
We actually had a big meeting recently where the Marin Bicycle Coalition made some really good headway into trail access. So like that is changing. And I think a lot of that's e-bikes. And to me, at the end of the day, there seem to be more people riding bikes than I've ever seen in my life, mm-hmm. just generally speaking. And if it's around town, they're mostly on e-bikes. And to me, it's unmitigated good. Like, I think the invention of the e-bike may very well be like a turning point in how we think of our interaction with the natural environment. I mean, that sounds grandiose, but like, I got an e-bike living in San Francisco. I got my first one probably about 5 years ago right before my first kid was born. And I went from a guy who loved driving in the city because I thought it was cool and it was fun to like know the fastest routes and to like try to get there really quick. And
you're different from the guy who just commented on New York City a second ago, you know.
For sure, but that's how it was. Like, that is how it was. Like, I'd like have friends that didn't live in the city come up and ride with me, and they'd be like terrified about how fast I drove. And I'm like, no, this is how we do it, you know. Like, took a lot of like pleasure in that. Like, I got from here to there in 17 minutes, you know, and like everybody was like, oh. But I got an e-bike, and it was like, oh, right. Like, now I'm aware of the natural space in which I live.
Yeah.
Like, I went from just being in buses and trains and the inside of a car to like breathing the air of San Francisco and like learning what the light looked like in this part and what this part smelled like and the different wind patterns of the city, and like everything changed. I completely stopped driving in the city. And it introduced such joy to my daily life that I know that's what's happening with everybody around me that I see now on e-bikes. You know? It's like when you see people riding an e-bike down the street, they're always smiling, even if it's these little bastard kids with like their pajama pants and no helmet. Like, they're laughing, they're having a good time. I mean, it's undeniably fun. And so I don't know. I mean, you can be a curmudgeon all you want. I mean, Lord knows I celebrate that sort of thing, and I'm a Luddite for most things. But the fact that e-bikes make it so easy to ride, and we already know. I mean, I think Colorado did a study last year, and they estimate like 400,000 vehicle miles. Like there were 400,000 fewer vehicle miles driven last year because of e-bikes.
I don't want them to go away. I just also
it sounds like you do.
Well, I'm talking about mountain biking more than anything. I think first of all, like you having that experience of like having started really on an e-bike as a mountain biker and now being more of an analog biker, that actually gives me hope, right?
I did not start as an e-bike.
Okay, well, your recent kind of a surge
into
mountain
biking. I got
into
it and then got out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that actually gives me a little hope, kind of like, okay, because I kind of feel like, well, if you start on an e-bike, why would you ever go backwards from there? Because that would just be harder.
I don't know. At the same time, I've gone from that with single speeds.
Yeah, I've gone from full squish down to like fully rigid, all that kind of stuff. But I just the thing I can always come back to is the simplicity of it and just the beauty of the actual original bike. And I know that all where does it end, right? It's like, well, now you're talking about suspension, you're talking about big fat tires. There's all
you
of these
like
things.
Bikes.
I just like bikes. I think it's probably what it comes down to.
And like my neighbor who has an e-bike who like commutes with it occasionally to the ferry she's not like a bike person. She's like, oh, this is more fun than driving. But like, she's not like over at my house talking to me about components. You know, like she's not.
I'm not a component guy either. I'm kind of in between, I guess.
But I doubt she even knows. Like, if you just were like, oh, that's cool. It's how it's a rigid frame. She'd probably be like, huh?
What's
like,
that?
She's not
right.
a bike person.
Yeah, I get
like,
you.
Just,
I get you.
This is a tool, and it's fun. And she might become a bike person, but like, that's not like you're coming at it from a place where you already had like an appreciation for what bikes are and what they do and how they're supposed to function. But I think for a lot of people who have just gotten into e-bikes, they didn't have bikes because if they did, like they would probably still ride them. You know what I mean? Like they were like, oh, this is a more fun and cheaper way to get around. And really, I mean, like they're kind of perfect everywhere. I mean, I guess you obviously need some level of bike infrastructure, but like if you live in the suburbs and you have these stupid giant big boulevards you have to traverse to get anywhere.
Yeah.
E-bike is rad. If you're like me and you live in a really small, like old town, e-bike is perfect. You know, they make so much more sense than cars. The more we can get people out of cars and onto e-bikes, the better everything will be.
Well, I mean, first of all, thank you for making me feel better. A lot of people don't know this, but Justin's also my therapist, so I feel better now. Second thing is, you're absolutely, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but clearly 30 people dying in e-bike accidents in New York City, that's a big number. And so that's something that gnarly. We need to kind of wrap
that's,
it around.
That's horrifying. Yeah. That's horrifying. Yeah. I don't know what to say about that. That's horrifying. Yeah. But I think the onus needs to be put on the vehicle and not the bike in that situation.
Well, lastly today, we're going to pivot away from all the cycling conversation and into a story from Explorer's Web that the woolly mammoth is back, baby! Colossal Biosciences, who is happy to ignore Jeff Goldblum's Dr. Ian Malcolm's advice from Jurassic Park, announced this week that they've created cells that perform the critical functions of stem cells. They hope this will generate the key genetic traits of the woolly mammoth. It calls this the biggest breakthrough in its efforts to re-engineer or de-extinct the ancient giant. If the efforts are successful, woolly mammoths might once again roam Earth's polar regions, or at least quasi-elephants that resemble them might. Colossal co-founder George Church was quoted as saying, "We hope we can affect an ecosystem in a positive way that maybe 10,000 years ago was degraded by humans, contributing to the demise of almost all major herbivores in the Arctic and causing a transition from grass to trees." First of all, can we drop the second L from woolly mammoth? Like, it's just woolly spelled with one L. It's bothering me. It's auto-correcting on my doc. It's pissing me off.
Is that like official?
So, yeah, because I actually was spelling it with one L, and then I looked at the article, and the article was all two L's.
Yeah, if I was going to write like, I mean, I don't really use the term woolly very often, but if I was going to write like, this is real wild and woolly, which is for some reason a saying.
Right.
I would just use one L.
One L.
I never thought about that.
So I don't know why the classification of the woolly mammoth is
also,
two L's.
Also, is there a mammoth that isn't covered in like a lot of hair? Like, does it need to be called that? Like,
that's
it's just a mammoth.
Good point. I mean, we've never seen one.
And was it wool?
That's an untapped thing we haven't talked about. Can we derive any sort of natural like performance fibers from the woolly mammoth?
Oh, you know we're
coming?
Gonna. Ibex is going to be all over that. Mammoth? Kidding me? But mammoth wool?
Regarding bringing the mammoth back, though, you're a man of science, you know, more so than me. I wanted to get your take on this. What do you think? Do you think this is a good idea? It just feels like that classic, like, you know, they were chosen for extinction, and we should just leave good alone here. But what do you think?
All right. I think Jurassic Park was a really great movie and even a better book.
How dare
But you? it kind of maybe messed us up when it comes to this sort of thing, because the whole point
in sound bites and movie quotes, so I can't, you know.
But like the whole point of Jurassic Park in the movie was just to make money. It was just like we're going to make like a theme park.
Correct. Right.
Right. So
what's the good of doing this? Because this
that's what I'm getting to. Is like I don't know these scientists personally. I'm sure that there are some that think how cool would it be to have a theme park and people pay $1 million to check out the mammoths. But that's not really why, as far as I know, that we're doing it. I've written a few pieces about this before. Russian scientists have been into this for a really long time because of the impact that like big herbivores can have on grasslands is pretty significant. And like, it's really healthy for a grassland to have big, giant, heavy animals walking around grazing and shitting all over it. It's hugely important. And I think I've read things before that part of the reason that the permafrost obviously global warming is contributing massively to that, but like when you erode grasslands and kind of screw up the topsoil, I think it has a detrimental effect on keeping all that stuff intact and keeping the methane that we're worried about from getting out. There's lots of other things too, but you know, like these animals evolve, the animals in the grasslands evolve together. And so to keep that ecosystem intact, you need the animals that helped create it in the first place. And so there's a lot of research into what it would be like to bring these big animals back to these sorts of places. And I know that like Northern Europe is trying to bring back big animals, either resurrecting them like the auroch, an extinct ancestor to the cow, or just bringing bigger, heavier animals up there to do sort of a similar thing. I mean, there's a lot, like cows fuck up stuff a lot too. Don't get me wrong.
Sure,
I mean,
right.
big hooved animals are really bad in places where they're not supposed to be. But in areas where, again, where the topsoil and the grasslands evolved together, much like North America did with bison, like it's crucially important to have those sorts of big animals grazing and pooping all over the place. It's part of the natural system. And so as we lose that, you lose lots of other things. I mean, like topsoil begins to degrade and the actual, you know, like the cascading impact of the loss of these animals is huge. And so if we're bringing them back to right like an ecological wrong, I think there's some merit there for sure. I mean, there's like a playing God aspect that makes me a little uncomfortable, you know, like,
well, that's
like,
what I mean. So if, just to be a Jurassic Park truther for a second, right? So if you have, how much of this is our fault? If you just go to the like basic thing, like we caused this, like, so we could say like we eradicated something now and it's extinct because we, as our, because of our like climate, our CO2 emissions. Okay. Maybe I get like, we can fix that now. How much did we contribute to these things going away in the first place? Or was it just, no, they went extinct because things go extinct sometimes.
I mean, I'll put my archaeologist hat on here. I mean, I suppose there's probably some evidence that suggests that there could have been like aspects of a changing climate that also contributed to some of this. I mean, obviously animals went extinct all the time before humans showed up.
Sure.
But the fossil record's pretty clear that like the number of like mammoth starts to drop right around 14,000 years ago when the Clovis people come into North America. And the Clovis people were almost certainly not the first people in the Americas. Now, there used to be, so that for a long time there was the Clovis first theory, which was that about 14,000 years ago, people came through the Bering, over the Bering Land Bridge and through like a big like ice-free corridor. And the reason that we know that and think that is these massive blades that the Clovis people made, like huge bifacial, like I'm doing this to Colin so he can see like a 6-inch blade, but big, like the size of your palm.
Yeah.
We start finding these about 14,000 years ago in the fossil record, which coincidentally is about when mammoths start to fall off the table in terms of numbers. And we can see all these archaeological sites that have bones, like mammoth bones and other megafauna, prehistoric megafauna bones with these obvious hunting elements. So
we've just been fucking shit up forever, basically.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course that's going to happen. Anytime a new predator comes into an ecosystem that's not evolved to defend against it. I mean, animals wipe other animals out all the time. That's part of the natural order of things. But we know that humans are probably the cause behind the megafauna extinction not just in North America, but South America and Australia and New Zealand and stuff. And this is what we do.
So is this, how much of this is going to be saving the permafrost in Siberia, and how much is it going to be, to your first point, it's going to be, you know, like, oh, hey, kids, come ride the woolly mammoth today.
I mean, how badass was that, though? Like, honestly, in all, like, if you gave me the choice, if you're like, okay, we can't, first of all, humans are idiots. We can't predict the future. We have no idea what's going to happen. Ian Malcolm was right 100% about chaos theory. We don't have a clue. Butterfly flaps its wings in Texas, and there's like a hurricane in China or whatever. Yeah, like for sure. Like we don't have any idea what the ramifications will be of like popping a couple mammoths out of a test tube somewhere.
You're going to say something here. What is it?
Well, no, I mean, like, I don't, but like, if you gave me the choice between like not doing it and doing it, do it. I want to see a mammoth. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But it does, where does so it end? When does the Tyrannosaurus come back? You know,
like, I don't think I'd do that. Like that's the thing. I actually think I would say, okay, the world has like, the world has clearly moved on. I mean, like dinosaurs died out of their own fault. Like we didn't do that, but the Earth is not that different than it was like 10,000 years ago. Like mammoths would still be here had we not killed them all. So they can still live here. They can still be fine. Like you could put a bunch of them in Siberia and they're not going to like screw anything up. So hell yeah, man. Imagine coming over a hill and seeing a mammoth.
That'd be sick.
I mean, I've never seen an elephant in the wild, you know, like that must be incredible just to see them just rolling around, not in a zoo, but like a freaking mammoth, or like, what's the difference between a mammoth and a mastodon, by the way?
One's a heavy metal band.
That's right. And one of them's a clothing company. I mean, if you found out that humans caused the extinction of, well, the passenger pigeon, right? Like we know that we did that, and it's like, okay, so that was like 100 years ago. So should we bring those back?
Well, that is kind of, where does it end? Like even if we can say we caused this, there is a little bit of how far do you let the spiral before you go, no, not that one. Right. And then so it is, you know, and at some point just let nature recover and kind of take the new path that we're on, I guess is the argument you can make.
I don't know how I actually don't know where I come down on that sort of stuff. I mean, there's a part of me that thinks that's a big part of, like whatever the biologists that work on things like, just like, you know, that are dealing with animals that are going extinct. There's a big debate about like, okay, do you even bother to protect them? Like, because if they're like, at what point is it, do you just kind of let it go?
Well, and there's like, look, by all accounts, we're, you know, we're all going to be extinct relatively soon.
We're all done.
You know, so let's let it ride. You know, let's see what we can make here. Go science. You know?
Well, I do think it's probably worth also, you know, kind of the home run ball. Like what if mammoths were, you know, maybe mammoths were supposed to be like the like beings that like ruled the earth. And maybe one day there'll be a la Star Trek 4, an alien probe coming from space
wondering
where all the mammoths went. And we'll be like, oh shit, had we let those guys make those mammoths?
Colossal Bioscience would say, check it out, we got our mammoths.
Way easier to just like re-engineer mammoths from stem cells and elephant embryos than to like go back in time.
I think we're closer on stem cells.
How did they do that?
What's that?
How did they go back in time in Star Trek 4?
Well, it's simple. They did a slingshot around the sun because that's what happens.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Like Superman did, same thing. Right?
No, he made the Earth return.
Oh, he made the Earth turn.
It's actually, of all the time travel things I've seen in movies, that might be the dumbest one. Like, so you make the Earth spin the other way and then time just reverses? Like, come on.
And everything's like fine.
Yeah, and then why wouldn't it just continue on the path it was on once
also,
you restart it?
That
you know?
Would be, like, nothing could be more devastating for, like, climate and life, all life on Earth.
The only movie to ever really kind of be honest about it is Avengers Endgame. They're like, you know, changing the past doesn't change your future. It's like, yeah, that actually makes sense. It's like, you just sort of like, you know, it doesn't mean, because your future is now the past. So you don't change anything. So it's like actually makes a lot of sense. Sorry.
That's the thing. You never know. You don't know the ramifications. It's entirely possible that right now, barreling toward the Earth at like a very like light speed, is some alien entity that's really pissed that the mammoths are gone.
It's possible.
But if they got here and they heard the trumpeting of the whatever the mammoth sounds like, they'd be like, all right, because I mean, we're good.
What's happening for you outside of rock, outside of fighting with rocks? What do you got going on?
I have a lot of writing to do, Colin. We're putting together, somehow it's already time for like the next issue. I'm starting to freak out. Just saying
I haven't even
loud.
Received the last one yet.
Well,
it might
right.
be in my
we're
inbox,
also trying to, know. We're trying to, it's nice to have these things done like in advance. It's really, it sucks to like have to like scramble to put everything together. So yeah. We're kind of trying to get this one done. So this next week is me writing about Coleman lanterns, which I'm excited about.
That's
the history
so sick.
Of Coleman lanterns. Interviewed a bunch of like really interesting artsy type folks in the outdoor world that I'm going to be covering this issue, and I forget what else, but typical good issue. But I got a lot of writing to do.
All right, well,
a whole lot.
Also, there's still time. Actually, there's time for next week, not for this week, but for next week to get news from the front, Rock Fight's weekly newsletter. So you want to get that blasted out to you like a rock from a yoked Justin Hausman's hand? So
not,
head over to.
We're not really going to throw it at you. It's interesting to email in your inbox.
That's actually why Justin's busy. He has to deliver all the copies of this newsletter by hand.
What is that? Bang!
We wrap it around a rock. He throws
rock.
It. Head to rockfight.co. Sign up right now. The Rock Fight is a production of Rock Fight LLC. For Justin Hausman, I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening. And here to take us out, he's looking tonight for some peace of mind because maybe then he'll find some strength inside. It's Krista Makes with the Rock Fight fight song. I screwed that up. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight.